Chaz and AJ Premier Auto Group News.
All right. How does a guy get arrested with so many serious charges and then get out on bail? Yesterday, this story completely puzzled us. Not hard, but this one definitely did. See if you can figure it out. 25-year-old guy from Norwalk had one hell of a day. Let's go to Preston, Connecticut. Now, according to police, the guy hit a guardrail hard. If you see the picture of the car, it was like impaled by the guardrail. The fact that the guy was able to get out of the car and start walking around is a miracle. EMTs arrived. They find the driver with a gun. So they're like, you know what? Maybe we'll call the cops. Montville cop shows up. Guy points gun at the cop. This is all according to police. Cop pulls out a gun. Guy runs into the woods. Cop sends dog after him. Dog gets a hold of said dumbass. Dumbass punches dog, tries to gouge his eyes out. Cop tases dumbass, placed in custody. They search the car, allegedly find all kinds of guns. Guns were stolen out of Bridgeport. So he's charged with operating under the influence, failure to drive in a proper lane, evading responsibility, cruelty to animals, assault on public safety, stealing a firearm, possession of a high-capacity magazine, carrying a dangerous weapon, criminal possession of ammunition, criminal possession of a firearm, carrying a revolver, first-degree threatening, a criminal use of a weapon. All those charges. Here's the kicker. He gets out on bail.
Crazy.
We couldn't figure this one out. Attorney Norm Pattis, what happened? How does this happen?
Do you know what the bail was?
$250,000.
Well, that's not a nominal sum, you know. So, I mean, look, both the state and federal constitutions say that a person charged with a crime has a constitutional right to make a bail. And there's a little bit of a difference between the federal constitution and the state constitution. In federal law, these are governed. There's a prohibition against excessive bail. And thus, under federal statutes, there are certain crimes in which there is a presumption against granting a person pretrial release or bail. It's a rebuttable presumption. You know, you can try to persuade a judge that the person can be released. But under the state constitution, it says that people shall be released on bail, that there shall be a reasonable bail. And shall is a term of enormous significance in the law. Shall means it's got to happen. So, for example, in the New Haven case involving Quinjon Pan, the man accused of murdering a Yale graduate student, the case our office is involved in, there was a $20 million bond set. And we argued in front of the state Supreme Court that was a violation of his constitutional right to both a reasonable bail and to bail.
Did you win that argument?
We argued it on September 4th, and the Supreme Court has yet to issue a decision.
Wow.
The justices appeared very troubled by the fact that in Connecticut, we sometimes have a practice of requiring bonds that are so high that they're effectively no bond at all.
You know, here's the deal, though, with that case. This guy that you're talking about, he potentially murdered someone and then tried to leave the country.
And this came up at argument that, you know, there may be a bond that is so high as to effectively be meaningless. And by the way, I would dispute that he tried to leave the country. There's no evidence that he did. There may be a
right. You're right. I'm basing this on
plan to.
I'm basing it on media reports. Yeah.
No, but let's leave that aside and focus on the case that, you know, the Preston case. But first, as to Pond, you know, it may be that a high bond is necessary, and it may be that there's an argument that a high bond is not the same thing as no bond if the circumstances are egregious enough. We argued against that in the Pond case. Let's see what rules the Supreme Court comes up with. The fact that it's taken them 3+ months to make a decision in a very simple case suggests that we're going to get a major set a decision and with directives to the trial court about what to do, because really nobody knows what to do in cases of that sort.
This guy,
in the Preston case,
this guy is clearly someone who could get in a car and drive through a parade.
Yeah, he's a flight risk thing guy, right?
In my mind, you know, I'm not saying he would do it.
Well, if you were the judge, what would you do? So, you know, he appears for bond. What bond would you set?
$20 million. Mm-hmm. Sounds good to me.
And I think that from a practitioner's standpoint, everybody agrees that would be unreasonable.
Who
I mean, there's
the
only
bond?
Been one
judge?
Bond that I'm aware of higher than $25 million. Well, bond is – that's an interesting question. There are officers in the courts known as bail commissioners, and there is the office of the bail commissioner. So they are given a set of standards, an algorithm, as it were.
Oh, my God. What does that pay? I want that job.
They go and they interview people, they check the boxes, and then there's a presumptively reasonable bond of a sort. So at the first presentment in court, the bail commissioner recommends a bond. The prosecution is free to make their own argument, and the defense lawyer makes their argument. And then the judge sets the bond. So $250 for these offenses, frankly, these charges, seems to me about right. Without, I don't know what the algorithm is, but I go to court all the time. That's what the market bears for something like this. Now, for that price, for that bond, he'd get a, he can either post $25,000 in cash at the courthouse and get it back when the case is over. That's called exoneration of bond.
Norm, couldn't the judge say, we want to hold you for some kind of mental evaluation or whatever? This guy, listen to his day. This is one day. Stolen car, hits a guardrail, holding a gun, points a gun. Oh, this all allegedly, you know, fights a police dog. And then they find stolen weapons in his car. I don't know. That doesn't sound like someone you want, like, walking around.
It doesn't, but he's presumed innocent. And unless and until the state proves it's charged by lawful process, he's got a right to bond. And so, you know, if we're going to start trying people based on the impressions they make on us in the news, the prisons are going to be overcrowded. And let's not forget, you know, we've had years now of agitation about defunding police, about community policing, about trying not to use bond in a punitive manner. I'm not saying the guy's a good guy. When you asked me to come on and showed me the story, I've been outraged about mauling the dog ever since. I mean, there's plenty about the guy I don't like.
That's the one that got Ashley.
Yeah, absolutely. No, this guy I voted for spoons to his eyeballs yesterday. Let's scoop his eyes out.
You know, I was thinking about it. I've defended all kinds of cases. I've never defended someone who's abused a dog. Frankly, I don't know if I could. My feelings are so strong.
Wait. The missing mom case, the guy who threw the baby off the bridge, the trying to think of other cases.
But it's a dog.
What can I tell you? Everybody's got a weakness. And, you know, I'm a dog.
Yours isn't babies.
We found your weakness.
It's my Achilles heel. In fact, you know, I've had border collies for many years, and they're all named after Greek heroes. So I guess it would be an Achilles heel.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
On the question of bond, you know, $250, frankly, is about right. I mean, you know, murder cases, you'll see, you know, where there's an allegation and probable cause to believe that somebody is willfully and intentionally taking the life of another. The bond is going to be somewhere between $1 million and $2 million for a quote unquote routine murder. You know, an animal was injured. There were stolen weapons. There was an assault on a police officer, but there was no weapon fired. No serious personal injury to a person. I can't tell you that $250 surprises me. Had it been $1 million, I would have been shocked.
You would have thought that was too high,
given the market. And you understand, you know, criminal defense lawyers are expert in evaluating the used car market of human suffering in the courthouse. You know, we know what the market bears, what a crime is worth, so to speak, if it's proven. What bond typically gets set, and you know this just by going to the marketplace every day and seeing these bonds set. So I think $250 is about right.
So if this guy, let's just say, all of this stuff is, or even half of it is true, he gets out on bond, and then he goes out and just kills a bunch of people, gets in the car, just runs over a bunch of people. Who has to take the responsibility for that? Is it someone who's elected?
The killer. Well, no. I mean, look.
No,
I mean, so the responsibility in what sense? He's entitled to a bond. Now, the question you asked earlier, you know, should he be held because he's dangerous? That's a harder question. Under the law, people who are incompetent can be held to be evaluated for purposes of competency. That's what's called a 54-56-D motion. You get in a fight with your wife, say, I'm going to 54-56-D it. And then you get taken off, you know, you get taken off to Whiting, the Forensic Institute, for, you know, 60 days or so. And they try to see whether you're competent and whether you can be restored to competence. But that's a different standard. In terms of just boneheaded evil, in terms of just the, you know, knucklehead in the first degree, which is what defines most criminal conduct, there is no such thing as
preventative. A knucklehead in the first degree.
I would love to be charged with that.
That's a T-shirt for me.
I was found to be a knucklehead in the first degree. Like,
So I think this guy, you know, if he goes out and he commits a mass murder, the judge who let him out on bond will wince. But what else could he do? We don't have a crystal ball.
What about
what we can see?
Norm Pattis.
This is a Minority Report, right?
Yeah. What about which was a crazy movie? About that Christmas parade guy who was clearly someone who shouldn't be out in the streets? $1,000 bond, gets out and drives through a parade. Like that's a problem, right? For somebody other than just the guy who drove the car?
It should be.
Well, it is and it isn't. Yeah, obviously it's a horrible set of events. And I think everybody wishes that we had a crystal ball, could look back and stop it from occurring again in the future. But how many bonds will be set in the United States today? Hundreds of thousands, if not a million or more. And in that broad class, you know, one or two people may do a crime thereafter that makes us say, gosh, we should really sit on bonds. We should be more careful. The result would be to punish everybody else who didn't. Because of the fear that an outlier might overreact.
All right, that's
and, you
a good
know,
point.
Hindsight is always perfect. I mean, we should have made it more difficult for people not employed by airlines to take flight training simulation. We learned after 9/11. In the bond situation, there are always going to be some unhinged people that slip through the cracks and do horrible things and engage in mayhem. But most of us are unhinged most of the time. Sometimes people make an ordinary mistake. They get called into the criminal justice system and they're entitled to proportionate treatment. So I don't think we want to judge what to do with everyone by what to do about the outliers. Yeah. The outliers and evil, you know, that's a problem I don't think anybody has
have
a
you,
real
Have you ever argued a bail and then got someone out who you thought, man, this guy should not be out? You know, like this obviously should have been a $2 million, but, you know, here he is. He's outside now.
I haven't had that happen, but I did once win an acquittal for someone in a pretty shocking act of violence. Tried to rip somebody's face off. That was the claim of the box cutter, by cutting him from the temple down to the cheek and tearing at the face. And the jury had reasons to doubt that the victim was telling the truth about what actually occurred and who did it to him. And then a year later, you know, the defendant engaged, I believe, in homicide. And, you know, if he had been convicted of the crime I defended him on at trial, he wouldn't have been available in the community to kill the person that he was alleged to have killed. But I didn't agonize over it and feel that I was somehow responsible for the murder. I did the job I was retained to do at the trial. The jury made the decision it thought was right. And then the guy went out and did something else. I mean, it's awkward. It doesn't feel good, but I don't feel like I did anything wrong.
Right. You know? Well, that's what you're supposed to do as a lawyer, is win. You don't go in there to lose.
Well, you go in there and you represent your client's interest, and you present your side of the case. The jury decides and the judge instructs on the law. And our hope is that justice gets done. And more often than not, it does. Every now and then you get crazy results. We had a crazy result with a New Haven jury last week. Guy was out at a Taco Bell one night, saw allegedly an antagonist across the street, tracked him down, and then came running back to the car later with somebody else saying he tried to rob the guy and shot him, disrespected him. So the decedent was found dead on the street off of Route Exit 8 off of 91, shot five times in the back, four times in the court, three times in the torso, once in the back of the neck, once in the back of an arm. And the jury came back not guilty on intentional homicide, that he didn't specifically intend to kill a guy not having shot him five times in the back.
That's
but
wild.
He was guilty of felony, but he was guilty of felony murder, robbing the guy, or shooting, killing the guy in the course of an attempted robbery. And I'm still scratching my head over that one. I mean, you shoot somebody five times in the back and you didn't intend to kill him. I mean, you know, I don't know. You know, our position was it wasn't this guy. The witnesses against him were unreliable because they themselves had been convicted of conspiracy to commit murder and were coming forward with a story many years after the shooting. But, you know, we ask jurors to make these incredibly difficult decisions, and then they do. And sometimes we just scratch our heads saying, what were they thinking?
Didn't see that one
this
coming.
This is one of them.
So before we go, what do you think of that song, Christmas Shoes?
I don't think I've heard it.
All right, that's a whole nother segment. Look it up.
Hey, so I understand that AJ is recuperating from yet another hernia surgery.
Yes.
I'm telling you, when he returns to work, you guys need to hire somebody to carry his coffee for him, because clearly the stresses and strains of ordinary life, you know, have just undone him. Merry Christmas, AJ, if you hear this. Recuperate, but don't you dare lift a Christmas cookie. Oh, my goodness. Let those elves do it for you, you know?
Norm, thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
Hey, Merry Christmas. Bye.
Merry Christmas.